You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Good evening, everyone. We're going to read out tonight with a message to Republicans. Okay, we get it. COVID is the precious, and you love it. You love COVID so much, you want it to spread in the schools, at the office, in the Walmart, on the cruise ships, and at the club. That great spongy ball with the red spikes, you want it pumping through your veins.
And so there you have it. You never thought you'd see or hear it, but there's Joy Reid of MSNBC leading the Larry Connors USA program. For good reason, because of her idiocy, for one thing. But there are several stories tied to her remarks we're going to have to break down for you. This is September 16th, 2021. What she is trying to say, basically, is that if you simply question, if you question the vaccines that are available now, if you have some hesitancy about it, of any type, if you have religious reasons, if you have possible health reasons, if you're just not sure because they were rushed through and you don't want the vaccine, now you're being mandated, perhaps by your employer or the federal government, unless you're a member of the Postal Workers Union. Yeah, the Postal Workers Union has a big lobby, big union, I should say, and they told Biden, hands off our people on ordering them to get a vaccination. Most postal workers encounter a lot of Americans on a continuous basis, 600,000 plus postal workers. But they are not having to follow the directive the president sent down for all government agencies, government contractors, and anyone doing business with the government to do. And we got many hospitals, schools, universities pushing the same mandates, cities, counties, states. And for some, they just say, look, I feel fine. I don't think I need it. I don't want it. And whatever happened to that issue, it's my body, my choice. No, doesn't apply unless you're a woman and you want to abort a baby, apparently. Not allowed to even question. Rapper Nicki Minaj is finding very fast how bad all this cancel culture blows up in your face when it goes the other way. And she even compares to what's happening right now with her because she dared question and say, I don't want it. I don't think it's good. She's comparing what's happening to her to what she saw when she went to China. She's comparing what she sees in this nation right now in orders and mandates and no excuses to what she saw when she went to China. We're going to get into that as well. More on General Milley. Did he or did he not call the Chinese leaders in two different calls before the election, assuring them that the president would not launch a strike against them or this nation wouldn't. If we did, he would call and let them know it was coming in advance. And following up after January 6th, do the same thing. Did he or didn't he? A lot of it's been taken for fact. I told you before, you can't take that for fact. It's part of a book coming out by Bob Woodward. Usually very well documented and everything else, and there's been no direct denial by Milley, but we're going to have to break that down in more detail. And Biden, of course, is happy to have that story circulating around Washington and grabbing all the headlines because of the wants to detract from the debacle in Afghanistan while trying to make friends with the Taliban. We'll get into that. In about 15 minutes, and in fact, it may be underway at this moment, an honor guard will be escorting Marine Lance Corporal Jared Schmitz from St. Charles to Jefferson Barrack Cemetery. There would be numerous road closures along Interstate 70 and 270 and 255 going down to J.B. Barracks Bridge. If you get caught in that, it's not that I'm trying to warn you. I'm just trying to have you acknowledge what's happening. And you'll probably already know because thousands upon thousands are expected to line the highways, the interstate, waving flags, showing support for Corporal Schmitz, who died in that attack in Afghanistan. Also, a special interview coming up, a young girl who survived the Rwandan Civil War, armed militias killing 500,000 to 1 million men, women, children. Her name is Marie Christine Williams. She's a woman now with a child and a marriage, but she survived Rwanda. It's detailed in her book, Triumph Over Darkness. It is a compelling story of survival. I think it's something we need to hear right now, because right now in Taliban country, a lot of men, women, and children are also being executed or raped or tortured or all. So I want you to hear Marine Christine Williams' story as well later. We do have a lot to cover over the next 2 hours. Lock and load. Ready on the right.
At LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
If you have mold in your home, your family can get very sick. You need to call Wellington Environmental. Realtors, even hospitals and doctors call Wellington to solve mold issues. A Belleville homeowner discovered mold. Good thing he called Wellington. The mold is gone. And Wellington's new chemical process saved him $3,500. A university was facing some major mold issues. They called Wellington. Issue solved. The university saved $40,000. Wellington also helps research and test new products to deal with mold. Call 314-644-4930. 644-4930. A-rated by the BBB, Missouri and Illinois. Say you heard about Wellington on Larry Connors USA. Save $100 on any mold treatment or $50 on mold sampling. 644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental. My sponsors keep this program on the air. So my thanks to John Bill Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Beale Roofing, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
You can run on for a long time.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Well, let's call the situation what it is, and it's the largest hostage crisis since 1979 in Tehran. And now you're seeing the administration push in humanitarian aid, which the Taliban are going to control and distribute. Let's call that what it is, which is ransom. Those eight planes full of Americans and full of our Afghan allies are still to this day stuck up in an airport in Mazar-e Sharif. But, you know, to what the senator and I are getting at is the Biden administration, led by Biden and Blinken, are going down this road of we can work with good and moderate terrorists against the bad terrorists. And let's be clear, and the intelligence is clear, the Taliban equals Al-Qaeda.
Let's stop it right there for a moment. That is Congressman Michael Waltz, Republican of Florida. And what he is saying is correct on so many points. Right now, the administration is stepping forward and planning to send more money to Afghanistan. Now, there are folks in Afghanistan, citizens, who do need help. They need food. They need water. But the Taliban now controls and runs everything. So it's going to be going directly to the Taliban leaders and terrorists. Then they will decide who gets the food, water, or other humanitarian aid. And he's pointing out eight planes full of Americans and full of our Afghan allies still stuck on an airport. And, of course, we still cannot get anything from this government, from the Secretary of State, the White House, the Pentagon, how many Americans are stranded, are now being held hostage in Afghanistan. As I've been stressing to you previously, if they cannot get out of Afghanistan right now, they are a hostage. So when Congressman Waltz of Florida says, let's call it what it is, the largest hostage crisis since Tehran, Every American who is not free to leave the country and come back here is now a hostage of the Taliban, whether or not they're actually in their physical custody at that moment. What are we doing about it? With this administration, I wouldn't even hazard a guess. They do think, apparently, by sending more money, that it will be a goodwill gesture and that they will graciously let one, maybe two of those planes leave, and who knows how many other Americans are hiding out somewhere else across Afghanistan, trying to get out of the country and evade the Taliban, or the Al-Qaeda, which is the same, we'll come back to them in a moment, or ISIS, which is going to be reforming, and the ISIS-K, a newly formed, going to exaggerate its importance again. And we've been told by the White House, any Americans who are still there, well, maybe 100, not if this is correct about eight planes full of Americans and Afghan allies, assuming those Afghan allies are truly those who get special visas because they did assist us during the 20 years, they and their family getting them out. But we've been told it's less than 100 Americans. And, if some didn't want to leave because they have family there, well, then that would be only because they're not allowed to take their family with them. And they don't want to abandon them in Afghanistan. And they were also told, believe it or not, that some that were given an opportunity to board a plane to get out said, oh, I'm too sick to travel. Are you kidding? Do you buy that story at all? But again, back to Congressman Waltz, as he's trying to point out that right now those Americans are pretty much being held for ransom. Send the humanitarian aid. When we get the money, then we might let one or two planes leave. That's pretty much what it's going to come down to. Congressman Waltz.
The Taliban equals Al-Qaeda. The head of the Taliban has been sworn allegiance to by the current head of Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, who was Osama bin Laden's deputy. Their prime minister is the guy that refused to give Osama bin Laden up. The only thing that has changed about the Taliban is their propaganda machine, but they're dealing with the same crowd around Biden that did Benghazi, that did the Bergdahl trade, that pulled us out of Iraq and led to the ISIS caliphate and did the Iran deal. They're appeasers to terrorists, and we're trying to stop it.
No one is trying to stop it. What we have had happen is that now we have a gathering of former presidents, two of them anyway, coming together with the current president, Bush, Obama, and Clinton also joining them, to team up with Biden to import Afghans. We have said repeatedly that if these that are seeking asylum are those who helped us in our time in Afghanistan, they are certainly entitled to asylum here because they are going to be subjected to who knows what kind of hell if the Taliban or the Al-Qaeda get a hold of them. And we made them a promise to get them and their families out if things go upside down. We have done that already with many long before all the fall of the Afghanistan nation. But now we've got former officials supposedly headed up by also being involved directly, maybe just lending their name, picture, I don't know to that extent, but they're getting former officials with the Clinton Bush Obama administration launching an organization titled Welcome Us, which will work with multinational companies, Airbnb, Walmart, Starbucks, Facebook, Microsoft, so forth and so on, provide financial support to Afghans arriving. That's all good. I'm for that. And again, this is a legitimate asylum issue, not those coming across the border illegally, just wanting a better job. I can understand they would want a better job to get out of some Northern Triangle country or out of Cuba coming through Mexico if they can or anywhere else. I understand that, but that's not an asylum issue. This is. So we want them to come in. But while we also got the Afghan situation going on, Biden is running around looking for ways to create some distractions And to that point, former U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley said, anything that he can find that is bright and shiny to take any attention away from what happened with Afghanistan, that's where he's going to be focusing.
I think the fact that Biden is going on this COVID mandate, spree around the country is only him further distracting from what's going on in Afghanistan, what's going on in the border. Those are two very dangerous situations that need to be dealt with.
They are still existing, but if you watch all the mainstream, or as I would say, state-controlled media now, you're not seeing it. Breitbart's been doing a good job, as are other sources. They just put out photos showing 8,000 illegals being held under a border bridge in Texas right now. They're all overflow from the PAC facilities growing by 800 to 1,200 every 8 hours that we set up. One source says basically law enforcement has collapsed at this point, especially around the Del Rio area. Many of these are Haitian migrants, all coming in through a Texas port of entry bridge and just staying under the bridge, just as at least we're here. And while Biden's running around pushing his mandates that everyone has to get the shot, whether or not your religion allows it, whether or not your doctor says it's far not good for you to do so, we continue to have the Democrats push all kinds of things that are just absolutely unbelievable. And at the same time, reject things that you would think they would buy into quickly. Give me one, Larry. All right, I'm going to give you one. Here's one. We know, of course, the Biden administration issued the mandates on American citizens. He ordered the Department of Labor, Occupation, Safety, and Health Administration, OSHA, to develop a rule requiring all private companies with 100 or more employees to mandate the vaccine, or those employees to be subjected to weekly coronavirus tests. And if that is not carried out, there's a good fine of $10,000, $12,000, $15,000 for each violation. He's also ordered the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services requiring vaccines for all health care workers who work at facilities receiving federal Medicare or Medicaid funding. All of this. But, and it's a big but, believe me, House Democrats just this week, now stand back, you don't know how big this one's going to get. This is pretty big. It got lost in the shuffle of all the news about Millie and everything else going around. But you need to know about it. During a hearing for the Democrats' $3.5 trillion budget reconciliation, there was a proposal by Republican Daryl Issa of California proposing an amendment requiring foreign nationals coming into the U.S. need to have a vaccine, should be vaccinated. You know what the Democrats did? Despite Biden's order to the Labor Department, OSHA, Center of Medical Care and Medicaid, the Democrats rejected a plan that would require immigrants to the U.S. to take one of the three current available vaccines. Rejected a plan to have illegals coming across the border or anyone coming in. That would apply also to the Afghans. Congressman Issa said clearly, we want this hypocrisy to end. It's not happening. And, of course, Biden would be glad for us to be more concerned about that again instead of the Afghan disaster and our Americans being held hostage. Oh, and House Democrats, by the way, have an amnesty plan that they're trying to put into this infrastructure package. Infrastructure. How this fits into infrastructure, you'll have to explain to me someday. Never mind, save your breath. You can't do it, and I wouldn't buy it anyway. But they are basically marking it up in amendments that would provide protection and prevent illegal alien gang members, convicted sex offenders, convicted drunk drivers, those convicted of firearm or explosive offenses from securing a green card and becoming eventually Americans. That's part of the amnesty plan. If illegals have come into our country and carried out gang activity, raped, pillaged, killed, they're going to get amnesty as well. Democrats rejecting an amendment that would have barred illegal alien sex offenders from receiving amnesty, along with other such cases. Do you see anything here that makes any sense? As I said, law enforcement along the Texas border says right now the system has collapsed. That's the first block of many that could happen to this nation. In the next two segments, I have something I want to share with you that's going to be extremely hard for some of you to hear. I'm going to set it up in this next segment for you. I've got an interview coming up later before we wrap this hour with Marie Christine Williams, author of the book The Dark Side of Human Nature. She was a teenager when the Rwandan genocide occurred between April 7 and July 15, 1994. During that 100 days, estimated 500,000 minimum, more likely a million plus men, women, children, raped, tortured, killed. She survived it. I'll give you more details of what was happening at that time in that region of the world before we set up the interview. Stand by, please. I'm honored to have First Crypto World in St. Charles on board as a sponsor. This is the first brick-and-mortar store where you can actually learn about cryptocurrencies. And what do you know about crypto mining? I'm confused. That's when I'm going to sign up for an education class. And you can buy crypto merchandise. FirstCryptoWorld.com. Get full details. FirstCryptoWorld.com.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
The Rwandan genocide I was talking about, again, started April 7, 1994 through 15 of July, 1994. And during 100 days around that time, members of the Tutsi minority ethnic group, as well as some of the moderate Hutu and Twa, were slaughtered by armed militias. The most widely accepted scholarly estimates are anywhere from 500,000 to 800,000 Tutsi deaths, and the estimates for the total death toll, 1 million plus. The scale and brutality of the genocide, of course, shocking the world. But no country intervened at that point. Many of the victims killed in their own villages, sometimes by their neighbors and fellow villagers. The militia also murdering victims with machetes and rifles. Sexual violence was happening constantly. The estimation, some 250,000 to 500,000 women and children, female or male, were raped during the genocide. We have in Afghanistan right now unknown terrors and horror going on. There's a new report out that 20 civilians were executed in one valley just a day or so ago. These civilians might have been teachers or young women who had been going to school at some point. And in many cases, before they're killed, they're also tortured, subjected to rape, or whatever Taliban terrorists decide to carry out against them. And last night on Tucker Carlson, on Hannity's program, there was a woman who appeared, an American citizen who was rescued from Afghanistan, and she said when she tried to contact the State Department, they weren't helping her. She said, I was there visiting family and one in the country. That's when the Taliban attacked Kabul. We tried to reach the State Department. State Department wouldn't help us. Private groups finally got her and her family out. And we're going to hear more stories like that. But the reason I'm bringing the Rwandan genocide story in connection right now with Taliban and what's happening in Afghanistan is because you can expect more genocide and just political killings. You can phrase them however you want, but the bottom line is, just because they have a different view, a different religion, they're going to be subjected to all kinds of horror and eventually, hopefully sooner than later, death, a quick death. I told you the other day this piece of video that's circulating already. I cannot authenticate who is doing the killing or where it took place or when. I don't know if it's from the recent, but it's out on the internet. I'm not going to put it up, but where some 20 men or so are lined up on their knees, hands tied behind their back. Behind each of them stands a man with a gun, and then they start the execution. First man steps forward, fires a bullet in the back of the man's head. As he falls forward, the executioner leans forward and fires again repeatedly. And then the second man, and then the third, and goes right down the line. We did hear a report the other day that the Taliban caught an Afghan who had worked with the British forces, and they executed him in front of his family. There is no way that you and I could really understand that. We see the pictures and we still can't understand it. I've got a guest coming up that can tell you about this kind of cruelty. She was 14 years old when she began to experience it. Think of that, 14 years old. She was in Rwanda when the genocide started, April 7, 1994. She now lives in the St. Louis area, married, mother of a beautiful child. But her story is compelling. It is going to be hard to hear, but you need to hear it when we continue.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
It's a fact that Ackerman Toyota is improving the local community. Jay Ackerman had a vision, and you can see the Ackerman Toyota dealership created a beautiful showplace at Hampton, just north of Interstate 44. Ackerman Toyota, sponsoring the next segment, new or pre-owned, Ackerman Toyota. For life.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
My guest is Marie Christine Williams, author of the book The Dark Side of Human Nature. We're going to tell you later, and it's going to be posted at our Facebook, her websites, where you can get a copy of the book. And also, if your church group wants to hear from her directly, you can also contact her and get details of how to do so. I know Marie Christine, her husband, and their new baby. They're always so fun to see that young baby, Chantel Marie. But she does not know her mother's story, and many of you don't either. Marie Christine, glad to have you on board with us.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, I've often thought about doing it because it is such a powerful, compelling story you have. I was setting it up in a previous segment as to what was taking place in Rwanda during the genocide period from April 7 through 15 to July 1994. You were 14. What was your life like before the genocide started?
Basically, before Rwandan genocide, I had a very hard childhood. I had the horrible people who raised me, and life was very bad. I really never expected that my life would get worse in 1994, in April 1994.
And at the age of 14, when this began to happen, what were the first experiences you saw that you realized that something was going terribly wrong, even not understanding maybe at that point?
Okay, so that point, it was rumors about the Hutu tribe actually attacking Tutsi, my father's tribe. But we never knew when this was happening. We didn't know when it was going to happen. So I found myself running from the gangs of killers.
And you did what now? It was kind of breaking up. You did what at that point?
I took off running, and my journey began when I was 14 years old, when I took off running away from the gangs of killers.
I understood that you said that you were in a backyard when that death squad broke into your family's house. So that's when you started running at that point, obviously. And what happened at that point?
So I hid in I hid for a while, and when I felt like it was safe, I took off running. I never ran so hard, so fast in my life. I was so desperate to find anyone to help me, and no one was there to help me, so I was on my own.
You didn't even go back into the house. You said you heard numerous screams, and you knew what was going on. Who else would have been in that house at that time?
So it was my parent, my father, his wife, and children. And we had some guests who came for Easter. So everybody was in the house but me. So that's what saved my life, because if I wasn't in that house, I could have never survived.
Only because you were in the backyard at the time. Then of course, it's dark. Obviously, you're frightened, anybody would be, and we're talking about a 14-year-old at that point. What do you see you've got to do? What did you do?
I didn't know. Basically, what I did is my instinct, I just took off running. I remember going to my neighbor, asking him for help. I remember him telling me, you have to leave. If not, I'm going to kill you. He shot at me. That's when I knew that the life I knew was ended, and I had to fight hard to stay alive. I had to find a place to hide. I was in a jungle for 100 days. I was hit with machetes. My journey, I didn't even know to this day how I survived the genocide.
Because everywhere you went, the slaughter was taking place. I'm sure you saw things that no one should see, certainly as a 14-year-old.
I remember the first time I took off running, I crossed the street. I almost fell in dead bodies. I remember seeing my neighbors laying there. And you know what was really sad is people you knew growing up, people who came to you, who pretended to be your friends, people who have really, you never done anything to them. They're the ones who came after you, and they knew who you were. They knew your what tribe you belong to. And it was bad. It was so bad that when I took off running, the first place I went, it was at the airport. I went to the airport because I'm biracial, I'm mixed. I wanted to go back to Europe, to my grandmother. And I remember when I got there, everybody turned me down and nobody helped me.
Because they feared that they would be targeted simply because they helped you?
No, because I was seeking help and nobody helped me. Everybody turned me down, including UN. Basically, the world watched us dying, and no one did anything to help.
I had mentioned that in the opening segment, setting this up, that the world was watching all this going on, but nobody moved in to help. They were just going to kind of let it play out, and it's horrific to think that it happened that way, but you, as a child in the midst of all of it, your concern is just day-to-day survival.
I had to fight. I had to fight hard because I remember how my father always told me that I was worthless, that I was stupid. In my mind, I wanted to show him how important and how intelligent I was. So I fought so hard to stay alive. I slept in sewers. I slept in the trees during the night. During the day, I tried to find a place to hide wherever I could, wherever I felt safe, just to survive.
But everywhere you went, you saw more and more bodies, so you didn't see an end of it at that time. And you're still trying to find food, water, a place to hide. Neighbors are turning against neighbors. They're killing each other because they fear that either they might be linked to the other side if they don't. I mean, and you acknowledge that you were a blended child, as you say, a mixed race, or father, Black Tutsi, is that correct, who converted to Catholicism?
Yeah.
Your mother was European, white Holocaust survivor from Romania. So you were a marked girl in so many ways.
Yes, I was actually a target because I remember one time I was hiding in the bushes, and this other woman came running, and she was desperate. She just lost her children, her husband. Her house was burnt down. She, as soon as she saw me, she heard me tight. She said, "I'm not going to hurt you. I'm one of you. Let's hide together." I remember the things I witnessed. That's why I'm here sharing my story, to help American people understand how good they have it here.
Yeah.
Do you imagine the first time I slept better? It was in 2008 after I moved here in the United States, because I felt so safe here. I felt like, oh, if something happened, I will call 911, I will call police, I will call somebody to help me. Growing up, I didn't even have that. I didn't even feel safe in my own neighborhood. So you were
captured twice, but you got out. A third time, they dragged you onto a bridge with other women.
Yes.
And what happened?
So what happened is, the first time they cut me, I remember I met a stranger, saved my life. He gave me a device. If they catches me, you have to run. You're young. You can do this. You can survive. So the first time they captured me, I took off running. They chased me, but I was young and I was fast. And the second time they captured me, I remember I was locked up in a school. Then they marched me on a bridge with a lot of people. So basically, we were standing on line. As soon as we got on a bridge, they would try to kill us. They would kill people and they would throw them off the bridge. And I was one of them. So I remember looking behind me, and I'm like, no, I'm not going to die today. I took off running. This guy grabbed me by my leg, and he dragged me back. After, of course, he shot me, he dragged me back, and I remember the first machete swing. He swung the machete towards my neck. I remember moving my head. That was the last thing I remember.
You have some physical scars, obviously, from the machete, bullet wounds, infections, broken limbs, but it's the inner side, too, that you would think, many of us would think, that as a 14-year-old that you have nightmares on a constant basis. But you basically made a promise to God if he would get you out of there, didn't you?
Yes, I did. So after I survived all of this, I was in a wheelchair for 4 years. I didn't know if I was going to ever walk. I was angry. I didn't trust people, but I remembered that, if I pray hard, maybe God's going to come and save me. And if God saves me, I will go back and serve others. And that's my mission today.
And that's what you've done. People. And that is, yeah, that is the power of that book. And we are going to put a link to our page. Marie Christine, I thank you for your story. I'm glad you're here to tell it, obviously, and praise God in the process. We will link everyone to your book. And again, thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
You bet.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
If you want great Italian food, there's only one choice. Well, wait a minute. There are really three choices, but all of them are Cafe Napoli. Cafe Napoli in Clayton, Town and Country, and now the streets of St. Charles. Visit any of them. Visit all of them. Cafe Napoli, family-owned since 1989. Cafe Napoli sponsors this next segment.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Some final notes on the interview we just had with Marie-Christine Williams, a survivor of the Rwanda genocide, 100 Days of Killing, in 1994. Her book title is The Dark Side of Human Nature. The Dark Side of Human Nature. You can also go to one of her websites, MarieChristineWilliams.com. Common spelling of all of them, MarieChristineWilliams.com. Or also this one might get you that you can recall quicker and faster, TriumphOverDarkness.com. TriumphOverDarkness.com. We will have both of those listed on our Facebook page. Quentin will make sure they're put up there where you can also go directly to them. That story of survival, already living in a country that was desperate, and then the genocide begins as one tribe tries to wipe out the other. The Rwandan government launched that offensive into Zaire, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, to go after exiled leaders of the former government and many Hutu refugees. And thousands more were killed. But as you heard Christine say that she vowed to God that she would not sacrifice her own humanity despite the inhumanity that surrounded her. So she did what she could to help and help others if she saw them, but many of them didn't even want her near her because they were afraid that someone would be coming after her and find them at the same time. Machete scars, bullet wounds, infections, broken limbs. She admits her emotional and spiritual recovery continues to this day. I'm glad to say that she was also able to bear a child. As we speak, parts of Interstate 270 have been or will be closed shortly, as well as parts of Interstate 70 had gone through that as well. It is the Honor Guard, police, and the Patriot Guard motorcycles and hundreds of other motorcycle riders joining with them to escort Marine Lance Corporal Jared Schmitz from the St. Charles Funeral Home to Jefferson Barracks Bridge. I know several of those that are taking place in the ride. And, of course, the highways are lined with Americans waving flags, showing their support for a young Marine who was one of those 13 killed at Kabul in that suicide explosion at the airport. I have heard conflicting reports that maybe the Marines and the Navy corpsmen who were killed were not killed by the blast, but killed as they went to help others who were injured and Taliban snipers were shooting at them. Those are details that would matter on an inquiry as to how we failed to properly secure and why we were doing that anyway, and instead of doing everything at Bagram Air Force Base, 30 miles outside Kabul, where we had a bigger perimeter set up and very unlikely somebody could have gotten close enough to carry out something like that. But what is happening here today with Marine Lance Corporal Jared Schmitz and the Special Honor Guard to take him to Jefferson Barracks Cemetery has happened elsewhere across the nation for the others who were killed that day. And unfortunately, over the years, we've had that happen over and over again for many other hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of Americans, men and women, serving their country in a war theater or just serving their country in a training accident happens. These are the kind of people that make America what it is. I fear so often that if we don't continue to reinforce the values we have, and listening to a story like Marie Christine was sharing, if we don't recognize what we have here and appreciate it, we will lose it. It's not a matter of politics, not a matter of religion. It's not a matter of being nationalistic where your country is, you know, it's you're going to destroy other countries. You just have pride in your country and what you're doing, and hopefully this country will continue to be a beacon to the rest of the world. We have flaws, we've had mistakes, but we're still the place where many want to go. Marine Lance Corporal Jared Schmitz and his final ceremony at Jefferson Barracks Road Cemetery taking place. Coming back on the next hour, more concern about General Milley. Did he or did he not call China and make statements that have been accredited to him? That story and more when we continue.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.